All right, this meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy will come to order. It is about, let's see, about 3:08, somewhere around there. And it is Tuesday, right? March 20th, day 64. We are meeting in the Ramona Barnes Room of the Alaska State Capitol, which is room 124. Present are Representative Peterson, Representative Lynn, Representative Olson, and Representative Foster, co-chair. I believe that Representative Sadler should be here shortly, and Representative Tuck as well. He is coming from a committee that just got out. So we do have a quorum to conduct business today. I'd ask everyone to make sure that you have your smartphone, cell phones, any of those things turned off.
I have a dumb phone.
Is that the operator, or is that the... make sure that they're...
Is that you want me to vote on?
make sure that they're good, so we don't have anyone having to dig down in their pockets for donuts or anything. Today we're going to continue our hearings on HB 294, which is relating to the power cost equalization. This is a bill by Representative Edgman. I believe he is not going to be able to make it, but we do have Adam. I would ask Adam to come up while I go ahead and mention also that following the... Following hearing this bill, we will have a presentation by RuralCap, their EnergyWise program. My intent on this bill is to hear it and to move it out today. So we do expect some questions, but the plan is to move that. We'll put on record that Representative Tuck has joined us. And with that, Adam, if you would, please go ahead and put yourself on the record and speak to the changes. Of course, it has been adopted. We are working off of Draft B, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Adam Berg. I work for Representative Bryce Edgman, and I understand he did adopt this Version B committee substitute last week. I can tell you really briefly what the changes are, just as a reminder. What we're suggesting is kicking up the available kilowatt hours that PCE can be applied to from 500 to 600 for residential use, and we're also suggesting a PCE program be used for small businesses up to 600 kilowatt hours a month. We put the cap on small businesses. We had to draw a line somewhere, and we came up with the 2,400 kilowatt a month ceiling. It's if you use more than that, you're not considered a small business. If you use less than that, you would be, and you'd be available to get the PCE subsidy. And that's it in a nutshell. We took out schools and took out larger commercial consumers.
Thank you. Representative Sadler has joined us. I know there's probably going to be a couple questions. I think most people have asked their concerns before. The one thing I'd like to ask you, Adam, just to make sure, is of course I agree that we've got to do what we can to help our communities out in the rural areas be able to handle the high cost of energy. The one concern I do want to make sure that we cover fully here is the endowment that this comes from. Please help me understand the research that's gone into it to make sure that can it withstand what we're discussing here, as well as how is the $400 million that we put in last year play into what we currently have in there now? Is this money going to be something that can, in the next couple years, will be coming from the endowment, will it be general fund, those kinds of things?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To get the best answer on the endowment and how it all works and everything, I would actually prefer to defer to Sarah Fisher Goad. But yes, it would require an appropriation to the endowment fund. She will be prepared to. You don't have a fiscal note in front of you for Version B, but the whole attempt with Version B was to bring down the fiscal note for this particular bill, which will have an effect on how much needs to go into the endowment.
Okay.
But for details and how that works, if I could defer that to Sarah,
we can do that.
Be appropriate.
I'll give 1 second. I want to make sure that all questions are asked of Mr. Berg before he steps down, and then we will ask Ms. Fisher Goad to join us here. Representative Foster.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate very much your ear and Representative Edgman bringing this bill forward here. in regards to what the program was prior to it going down to the 500 kilowatts, can you just explain what it was before and why it was changed?
Certainly. Thank you, Representative Foster, through the chair. Prior to 1998, we were at a 700 kilowatt an hour maximum for residents, and it also covered schools and some public facilities. Actually, the public facilities calculation didn't change in 1998. There's a whole Blue Ribbon Commission report that came out back then, and I don't know if I can summarize it as to why everything was taken out, but I think basically the PCE program was under fire in the legislature, and we were at a different time energy cost-wise, and you know, I can't tell you what went into all the machinations of that Blue Ribbon panel, but that was the basic story. PCE was viewed as a subsidy to rural Alaska, and it was under fire, I think, in the legislative process.
Followed by Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And from what I understood, and I just wanted to get confirmation on this, oil, I believe, had dropped significantly. I don't know if it was $9 a barrel at around the time or somewhere around the time, but so anyway, and I guess my point was I just wanted to maybe point out at the time times were difficult, but now you know, the state flush with surplus as well as you know, cost of or price per barrel, what are we at, $120 a barrel or something like that now, and so anyway, thank you.
And if you don't mind, if I add to that to clarify, my understanding at the time also the endowment wasn't created. That was just, and you can, to further discussion, make sure that we get this out make sure that we fully discussed everything. There was not an endowment at the time. It was just straight general fund money that was going into it year by year at that point in time. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding, yes.
Yeah. Different times, different situations.
Yep.
I appreciate it. Are there any questions from committee for Mr. Berg? Representative Sadler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just generally, we've had a lot of testimony in this committee this year about the various programs we've got to increase energy efficiency and conservation. And having read through a lot of the information in the last couple nights, but not all of it, Adam, are there any provisions requiring that those who receive the PCE to have insulated their homes or taken other steps to be more efficient or conserve that energy properly?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, no, there are no requirements that you've weatherized, insulated, done anything in particular that I'm aware of.
It's always hard to ask why someone doesn't do something, but any consideration given by the sponsor to try and include some of that linkage between increasing the power cost equalization amount per month with improved efficiency?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, we discussed a wide variety of things, including the conservation community, whether they would be supportive of increasing kilowatt hours per month that people use. And our feeling is, in our office, from everybody we've talked to, people right now aren't even in high-cost areas aren't coming close to the 500 a month, at least during the summertime. And we think increasing it 100 kilowatt hours a month, they're not suddenly going to start burning a lot more power. They're already into the conservation mode out there. They're paying a lot for energy, even with the PCE subsidy. And we gave it thought, but the fact of the matter is, too, weatherization program works great. There's some delays in getting to some areas of the state, though. It's not like you can sign up for that program and be guaranteed that your house is going to be weatherized within any specific period of time. And why penalize somebody? If they're waiting for work in their house, they're already paying high power bills. If their house is inefficient, actually those kilowatt hours they're using are going, you know, a lot less than they could be if they were weatherized up. They're paying the price, though, and it's true the state is kicking in on this PCE payment for those unweatherized houses, but it's in everybody's best interest to have as tight of a house as you can, really.
I understand you can't do everything in one bill, but just what I wanted to ask.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. Any other questions for Mr. Berg? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Which communities qualify for this? Because there are some communities that are small that you would think might qualify for PCE, but because maybe they're on the road system or whatnot. What are the general qualifications on which communities are eligible for this?
Representative Foster, through the chair, I'll ask Sarah again to clarify this for me, but I know that the price, base price, is based on power costs in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau. Those communities are ineligible for PCE. I believe, I'll turn around and look at Sarah, I believe it's Cordova also is ineligible for PCE. Incorrect. Maybe you can help me out with this.
And maybe we can, when she comes up, we can ask her to go ahead and answer that question. So what we'll do is just make sure. Any other questions for Mr. Berg while he's here? Thank you, Adam, for taking the time. Ms. Fisher-Goat, if you come on up, you know the drill. Put your name on the record, state who you are with, and if you'll start, you can answer Representative Foster's question, and then if you wouldn't mind, I can restate the question that I had earlier, or you can just go straight into that as well.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Sarah Fisher-Goat, Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. PCE-eligible communities is actually the utilities, and it was based on what they were generating power in the mid-80s. It was 1985, I believe. So if they're generating a certain percentage of diesel, they would be eligible for power. The utilities that were excluded would be the rail belt utilities, and then specifically the Fort M Pool communities were also excluded. So some of the small road communities are served by Golden Valley, for example, or Copper Valley Electric Association, so they would not be eligible. So it was really based upon what the generation source was in the 80s. Cordova actually, although they do generate from hydro, because they generated for diesel by diesel in the 80s, they are still eligible for PCE.
Do they take advantage of it?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, there's actually a provision that if the utility chose not to, there's an opportunity for folks to petition for the utility to take advantage of the program. And since they do, their threshold, the other way a community is not eligible is if their costs are below the floor, which at this point is about 13.5 cents a kilowatt hour.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. And then I think, Mr. Chairman, you had a question about the PC Endowment Fund.
If you would, please, you know, if you could respond to the Endowment Fund, can it handle this? And how is the $400 million we put in last year, at what stage does that kick in? Those kinds of
certainly
questions.
The Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund is it's a percent of market value fund. So the fund is invested to earn 7% over time, and on an annual basis, 7% can be used for the PCE program. However, it's a three-year percent of market value, so it's based upon the three-year monthly average market value. So the $400 million that was put in as of June 30th last year does not calculate for the PCE cost for FY13. That's based on the 3 years prior, so it would be the fund balance in that average market value for FY12, 11, and 10. So as we go through the years, a third of the fund would then be incorporated into the FY14 and two-thirds by FY15, and then the full $400 million would be utilized by FY15. Excuse me, 14, 15, 16, excuse me. So that's why you kind of see this a little bit of a delay on that. The $400 million, I think the program as it is now without the changes proposed in 294 was, I think, my understanding of that dollar amount was to then make it a potential where you would only need 5% of the fund to be used rather than the 7%. And I think part of that is that 7% is a equity. It is invested in equities. The Department of Revenue is the fiduciary of that. And I think I had heard in the past that there have been concerns about 7% being a very aggressive investment rate, especially in these times. It may not have been when the endowment was originally incorporated in 2001. So,
what is the full principle with the $400 million?
I knew you were going to ask me that, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize. I think it's a little over $700 million. I don't have that figure with me, but I can tell you that the estimate with the changes in the version B of House Bill 294, the expectation is the endowment being fully utilized should, and of course this is based, this can, if the market's volatile, the fund earnings are volatile. The assumptions in the estimate is that there could be $51 million available from the endowment. It would still require in FY16 $7.3 million available from the general fund for the total cost of the program, which is estimated to be about $58.3 million with this program change. The fiscal note that you'll see will show about a $21.1 million increment this year that would have to be covered by the general fund for the program. This is in addition to what's already in the budget, in the governor's FY13 budget.
So even after the $400 million is fully, we're able to fully utilize it, 3 years are over, we'll still need $7 million from the general fund based on the changes that we're making here.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I should, you know, it's very difficult sometimes to estimate the cost of the power cost equalization program because we have to be looking about a year and a half ahead when we're looking at the program. What we don't know is the floor of the program that's based upon the 1 year prior's average cost between Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau. We've made some very rough estimates on how many commercial facilities would be available on this. It's assumed to be 25% of the commercial customers in the community in the communities. So that's kind of that would be a new factor. At least it's been over 12 years since we've calculated the commercial customers, and so our estimate for commercial customers with the limitations put in the CS would be about $12.5 million of cost. That's something that it may be different as we actually go through a year of evaluating that. And also, in addition, the 100 kilowatt hours used, we do assume that those 100 kilowatt hours would be used, so there would be an increase in the program of $7.5 million for that. So that's essentially the additional cost of the program. And so it is the expectation, at least right now, it looks like there would continue to be a general fund need, but again, it depends on the market considerations and the performance of the fund and some of these other factors. If there's a reduction in the cost, if fuel costs go down, of course, then the cost of the program goes down also.
Right. So we could still one last question, and then Representative Sadler, if you'll be ready. So really, to make sure to not have to pull general fund money out in 2016, at this point we would probably need to appropriate another $100 to $150 million to keep it viable under its own weight. And that's just an estimate. I'm not asking you to give me an exact number on that, but
Mr. Chairman, I'm honestly not very quick at doing math in my head at the table, but I'd have to evaluate that on it. It wouldn't take much, but you know, we could provide some additional analysis if you thought that would be valuable. But it's almost a little hard to tell at this point, and especially if there is additional funds put into the endowment, it would then also have that lag.
Right. Obviously, why we'd have to put an end sooner than later to get to the point where we wouldn't have to pull from the general fund. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, you stole my thunder on my one question. I was going to ask Sarah what the principal has been for the PC endowment, and so I could do the math myself and find out if that 7% payout was going to work. A general kind of question, having been around the building for a while, I remember various discussions on PCE when they created the endowment, and I think the understanding was, to some degree at least, this would be a fire and forget. Let's take a big lump sum of money, put it aside and have the spinoff from that, the proceeds, pay for PCE so we don't come back for annual GF appropriations. That's not happening in this case. You still need the $7 million by increasing the kilowatt hours per month. It's going to put that calculation cattywampus again. You said that you think that 7% may be too aggressive an assumption for payout, and from my experience, that's probably a fair assumption. Does raising the amount of kilowatt hours per month and increasing to those that receive it, does that put the structure, the fundamental structure of PC, at risk again? Is this something we can keep doing?
through the chair, Representative Sadler, I guess I kind of put that in the category of a policy call with respect to, you know, the endowment is a funding source for the program. The general fund dollars have been made available for the program to be pay out at 100% of the formula costs. So it really depends on, you know, what's the, I guess, the intent. Has it been that the is the assumption that the endowment would be at a point where it could fully sustain the program? I think even when the endowment was created in 2001, the estimates I believe at the time on what they thought the full funding of the program would be like $15.7 million a year, which is significantly less than what we're seeing now in the cost of the program, primarily driven by the increased fuel costs for the eligible communities. So there's kind of a lot of moving parts and pieces in the program. It's impacted by what happens in the rail belt and in Juneau for rate costs, and then also the fuel costs that are paid by rural utilities. So, I mean, I don't know if I can say that it's cattywampus. It just depends on what you have as the formula than how you want to pay for it, I guess.
Actually, to put a finer point on that, the follow-up, I guess. Maybe I've misrepresented it. Was the PCE endowment ever supposed to be or envisioned as the one sole source of funding for PCE programs, or was it that that would provide the bulk of it and they'd make up for it and make good with the GF?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, there was actually a time where the appropriation was the appropriation and we'd have to prorate the program. And several years ago, the legislature and also the appropriations that we've had in the past years was pay at 100%, and the funds would be made available through the endowment and the general fund. So there's a couple different ways that you can get there, and the legislature has chosen, and you know the governor's budget includes the assumption, and the goal is to pay PCE at 100%.
Okay. Through a combination of the endowment and GF.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you,
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, I was also thinking about some of the renewable energy projects that are going to be coming online in the next few years, and also about weatherization and energy rebate programs making homes more efficient. Do you think that might, over time, reduce the demand for the PCE program to where it might the fund might actually pay for the cost of the program?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, I think that's one of the goals, and I think it's a far-reaching goal in some respects that we could get through renewable projects to have the cost completely or have significant reductions in the PCE program. We are seeing some reductions in what would be part of the PCE cost for the communities that have completed projects and actually have data that's being provided back to the Alaska Energy Authority. But as we've discussed with other legislation in this committee, there are some communities that have, you know, they may have a wind resource, but wind is a very difficult. You can't displace all of your diesel. It has to be integrated with the diesel, and it can make a difference. We think we can have some diesel displacement, but it would be difficult to have a complete reduction on needing that diesel fuel, needing diesel to run the rural utilities. So, you know, I think as we have more projects come online with renewables, that's definitely something that we're looking at on the impact to ratepayers and the impact that is essentially shared between the state and the ratepayers when those projects come online.
Thank you. Okay. Are there any other questions of Ms. Fisher-Gode? All right. Well, don't go too far, but we will move on to public testimony right now. If there are any additional questions for Ms. Fisher-Gode, she will be available for those. What we'll do is we're going to start off with public testimony out, and I'd like to start with Dillingham, which would be Ray Bell Whitcomb. And Dillingham, are you there? And if you are, please state your name, your affiliation, and go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, this is Ray Bell Whitcomb, and I am from Dillingham. I actually work for Bristol Bay Native Association as a workforce development director, And I'm also like to testify on behalf of my own small business, too.
Mm-hmm. Please.
Okay. Okay. Well, first off, BB&A actually manages the low-income heating assistance program. And what we're finding out with many of our rural households is that the amount of money for energy assistance may not be enough to satisfy their total household heating needs. And relying upon the power cost equalization is a significant benefit to the families. We have many communities right now that are running out of fuel for their local tank farms, and they're having to fly fuel in. And so the ramification of that is that those households are having to use some electric heaters, which is significantly increasing the cost per kilowatt that they're being charged per month. Many of our households are facing electric costs between the $500, $600, $700 a month range, and some upwards even higher. The way it works with our programs out here for weatherization, they target specific villages and travel to those communities and try to do all of the households within that community and then move on to the next one. So hearing the comments of not all people get the assistance is correct in our region. And so they may be on a waiting list for weatherization for a few years. The next part is that as a small business owner, it's a real impact for having PCE because even though it may seem nominal compared to urban businesses where you have a significantly lower kilowatt per charge, it really impacts us out here because that might be an extra person that might be able to go to work in a small community. We have small regional mom-and-pop operations that are running bed and breakfasts and even the local small, very small grocery stores, and that really impacts the ability to provide groceries at a very reasonable cost. In Dillingham, a gallon of milk is upwards of $10 a gallon, and so all those factors really hinder the ability to survive economically in rural Alaska. So I really support, you know, I'm looking at this proactively to say that, yes, it would be nice to have the increase per amount per kilowatt, and from the avenue of being on the workforce development and trying to spur economic business development by allowing businesses to have PCE would significantly improve our ability to function out here.
Thank you for your testimony there. Are there any questions, Representative Foster?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your testimony. You had mentioned electric $500, $600, $700 a month. I just kind of wanted to underscore what you're saying. I recently read in a Institute of the North just recently put out a report on energy in rural Alaska. I think they called it the rural conundrum. And they mentioned that currently some households pay as much as 47% for energy, which would be heating and the electric bills. And so I just wanted to thank you for pointing out the amount that you pay out there in terms of, you know, $500, $600, $700 a month. But my question, I know some areas of the state they pay as low as 8 cents per kilowatt hour. Do you know what you pay there before and after PCE in Dillingham?
Currently in Dillingham, it's 48 cents a kilowatt, but that doesn't even compare to some of our upriver villages that I think are closer to a dollar range per kilowatt.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Question that I have real quick is, you mentioned $10 milk there in Dillingham. Any way to give us an understanding of what part of that $10 is the energy cost? And how we could maybe, well, what we might be saving. I know it's a stretch, but.
Well, you know, for the small commercial grocery stores that have to run electric coolers and freezers, that's a huge amount of cost. We have one store that's paying between $30,000 and $40,000 a month just in their electricity bills to run their freezers and their coolers.
Okay.
And so, of course, they're not going to eat that. They're going to, you know, trickle it down to the cost per unit of items being sold. And that's the only way for them to recover that. And so as a small business owner, you know, we have many mom-and-pop operations that have small bed and breakfasts or even a small garage, and that's a separate building that has its own separate power source. You know, for them to do a basic car repair is a huge deal with just running, you know, paying the standard rate per kilowatt charge and not getting any PCE. It really impacts them, their ability to manage and pay their monthly bills. And then it trickles down to the utilities that are having, you know, people shut off because they can't pay their monthly amounts.
Right. Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, appreciate your testimony. We are going to move now to Fairbanks. And I should have said this before, Ms. Whitacombe. I do want to make sure that I clarify this with everyone. Please just make sure that everyone keeps their comments to about 3 minutes. We do want to make sure we have enough time for both this as well as the presentation by RuralCap. In Fairbanks, we have Davis, and I apologize if I say this incorrectly, Paulunas Meisner. If you would please state your name appropriately and state your affiliation. Go ahead with your testimony.
Sure. Yeah, my name is David Paulunas Meisner, but you were pretty close. I currently work up in Fairbanks with the Yukon River Intertribal Watershed Council, but I want to stress that although I've been working on energy projects in rural Alaska for the last 3 years, I'm not here to speak on behalf of the Watershed Council. I'm here to speak as a pragmatic Alaskan who has experience working in rural Alaska. My worry is that the extension of PCE credits to rural businesses will act as a disincentive for businesses to innovate and to make energy efficient modifications that will help solve the underlying issues in rural Alaska. Here are two examples. According to the AK Warm software, in certain buildings and PCE communities, it is not effective to change to high-efficiency lighting because with PCE credits, the heat produced by the inefficient lighting sources is cheaper than the extra fuel oil that would be needed to heat that building if a lighting change had occurred. Creating electricity from fuel and village generators is about 30% efficient. Creating heat from fuel oil is about 80 to 90% efficient. That doesn't make sense to me. In another example, an Alaskan entity was unwilling to spend ARRA dollars, American Recovery Reinvestment Act dollars, on a lighting retrofit in rural Alaska because with the PCE credit on a community building, the payback for that project was 10 years, even though without PCE credits, that same payback would have been 3 to 5 years and made the project viable. I fully support the efforts of the legislature to provide more sustainable solutions to the energy crisis in rural Alaska through the Renewable Energy Grant Fund and the Emerging Energy Technology Fund. I think these lead to long-term solutions. I'd propose that rather than provide PCE credits to rural businesses, the state establish a matching grant fund for rural business owners to take measures to reduce their electrical consumption. This program could be modeled after GVEA's Business Sense program. That's the utility here in Fairbanks. Here's a personal example. In 2011, I led a project at a grocery store in Anaktuvik Pass. We spent $6,600 on material and changed 132 fluorescent tubes to energy-efficient LED lighting. That store is now saving 1,200 kilowatt-hours per month on electricity. Their return on investment is 1.6 years, and their 10-year savings will be about $45,000. I want to stress that I support the state's efforts to make living in rural Alaska more affordable and more sustainable in the long term. In order to do this, the state needs to implement a program that rewards innovation rather than enabling inefficiency.
Thank you, Davis. Any questions for Mr. Davis here? Representative Foster?
Thank you. Just a real quick comment, Mr. Sherman. So I want to thank you, Mr. Missy. I actually just met him out at the energy conference in the Copper River Basin area here just last Wednesday, where I was able to give some updates on legislation on energy here. And I was trying to think to myself, how am I going to ask the question that he asked me? So I'm glad you came online and did that. So I think it is important that we try and look at this from multiple angles. And you know, I certainly support PCE, and we want to make sure that we're, you know, it was intended as a bridge, and we want to, I think all people in rural Alaska want to get to that point where, you know, it's not something that we have to rely on, and so we want to create the correct mechanism. So I appreciate your comments, though.
Yeah, I appreciate them as well. I wouldn't mind if the sponsor had, if you'd take notes, and if you do want to respond to that now, but if you wouldn't mind taking notes, and then maybe after testimony has been done, if you might make your thoughts on something, how we might be able to help these businesses move on. I'd appreciate that. The last LIO that we have is up in Nome. We've got Chuck Wheeler. Chuck, if you're there, please state your name as well as your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Foster. My name is Chuck Wheeler, lifelong resident of Nome. Been on heating fuel since day one. I support the bill in its intent. However, it doesn't take care of the problems we have here in the coastal villages where there is no real subsidy. It's brought in in a limited time period. The fuel is inefficient, and we need to get on alternate fuel. But that aside, PCE covers the fuel surcharge, and that's about it. I say increasing it to 700 or 800 kilowatt would be helpful because people run out of fuel. They run their electric heaters. They don't have any choice till they get shut off. But when you look at the power assistance programs, they've got the power project fund, they've got the rural electric revolving fund, and the Southeast Energy Fund. We need a northern energy fund here in Alaska, the coastal villages, and the interior. Most of Fairbanks is on diesel fuel. There's some trucked from the slope of gas. We're not going to see gas here in Nome, Alaska, or along the coast for some time to come, for whatever reason, but we have it right out in our backyard. We've got coal also. But my point is, this power cost equalization is just chump change to the amount of money that the state spends for energy projects. I end up my testimony with that. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions from committee members? All right, I appreciate your testimony, Chuck. Seeing none. What I'd like to do is move to within the building here. Is I don't believe there's anyone signed up, but I do want to make sure. Is there anyone here that would like to testify on it before we move to the off-nets? Doesn't look like there are, so we will move to the off-nets. We will start with Mayor Kohler with the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative. Mayor, are you there? And if you are, please state your name and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I am here. My name is Mira Kohler, and I am the president and CEO of Alaska Village Electric Co-op. We're headquartered here in Anchorage, and we serve 54 villages across the state. I would like to testify today in support of this House Bill 294. I actually think it is quite significant, even though it only proposes to change the limit for residential consumers from 500 to 600 kilowatt hours, but it proposes also to add commercial users into the mix. I cannot speak for the statewide consumption of PCE, but I can certainly speak to AVEC's own figures. And when I look at our numbers, last year in 2011, the average PCE consumption for a residential user was about 250 kilowatt hours per month. And the average electricity usage was about 400 kilowatt hours per month. So as you can see, only about 60% of the residential electricity that's used actually receives PCE. So even if the ceiling were to increase to 600 kilowatt hours, I don't think we would see much more than a 20 to 25% increase in the kilowatt hours that are receiving PCE for residential users. For commercial users, that 600 kilowatt hours actually could be fairly significant. As was pointed out earlier by Adam Berg and also by Sarah, the original PCE language did include commercial users. In fact, included all users for the first 700 kilowatt hours a month. And then over the years, the program has changed. One of the things I did want to add to Sarah's testimony is that one of the original requirements for a community to be eligible for PCE is that residential kilowatt hour sales in that community had to be equal to or less than 7.5 million kilowatt hours. So it basically excluded all of the larger communities just because of that definition, and that was intentional. And it did also require that 75% of the electricity produced in that community in 1984, the year that the PCE was enacted, had to come from diesel fuel. And so over the years, even if you no longer use diesel fuel or use less of it, you're still eligible for PCE. And so what that does is it translates back to the fact that mention was made about the renewable energy projects that are going in rural Alaska. And, of course, as you all know, AVEC has developed wind turbines in several of its villages. most of them not through the Renewable Energy Fund, although we're doing more of that these days, but they were primarily funded by the Denali Commission and the Rural Utility Services in the past. And typically we see the cost of electricity, the fuel component, decreasing by 5 or more cents per kilowatt hour. And when that happens, of course, the state gets back a portion of that because the PCE rate goes down as a result of the renewable energy going into the community. So it really is a win-win situation. I actually think that this raising the ceiling to 600 kilowatt hours will result in a net PCE bill to the state of Alaska that will not exceed the 7% spinoff from the existing endowment fund. It may, for the first couple of years, while we're still getting to that three-year average value of the endowment fund, but the endowment fund right now, at the end of February, was worth $760 million, so we can expect that that number would spin off actually enough PCE to cover pretty much the cost of the program. With that, I know that your time is short, and I will be happy to stay online and answer questions. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much, Mira. I was recently on the jet, and I read the report that Institute of the North, of which you're, I believe, the co-chair with Ethan Schutt, on the rural conundrum. I get, well, first of all, if you could, the title of that is?
It's Energy for a Sustainable Alaska, the Rural Conundrum.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and I had the opportunity to read through that, and I think that's a great report. I think it's a great starting point, you know, for the state in terms of trying to solve the rural issues. And if it's possible, if you could get maybe copies to the members of the committee here, you know, I'd certainly appreciate that. And I don't know if it's possible, and maybe this is something that we can talk about, but it would be great if we were to have somebody who could come in and maybe explain that to us. And so anyway, I'm just putting that out there for now. And I wanted to mention also that for the people who may not be familiar with PCE, there's a big section in there on how it works and also the history of the program. So I did have a question, and that is if I don't know if you have an answer to Mr. Messier's question that he posed earlier regarding the effects of PCE on businesses, or if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I heard his comments with great interest. And first, let me thank you for the favorable comments on our report. We did labor long and hard over that, and we have run out of printed copies, and we're frantically looking for sponsorships to print another 500 copies. But I would be delighted to come and personally present you with copies of the report, and would be happy to also give you a presentation on the report itself using the materials that I used at the debut of the report when we presented it last month. But I thought it was very very intriguing what Mr. Paulunas-Messier posited, and it's a very interesting, and that's part of the conundrum. And his statement was that commercial establishments or other establishments are reluctant to change out incandescent lighting for more energy-efficient lighting because the incandescent lighting puts out heat, and once you change the lighting, then you have to burn more fuel in order to generate the same amount of heat, and a PCE would be a deterrent. That would be true in a facility that is receiving PCE on all of its electricity. So that would really only apply to buildings that are considered what's known as community facilities. And to define that just a little bit further, a community facility, and it is included in HB 294, it's not changed, but a community may receive PCE for its community facility buildings in an amount up to 70 kilowatt hours per resident in the village. The vast majority of our villages have community facilities where the amount of electricity that's used is well below the ceiling of that 70 kilowatt hours per consumer. And indeed, in those buildings, if their electricity has been subsidized by PCE down to 20 or 22 cents a kilowatt hour, It probably is more expensive for them to replace the heat from incandescent bulbs with diesel-fired heat. But I have been in a lot of those buildings, and I don't see incandescent bulbs in them. I see fluorescent tubes on the ceiling. And so I'm not really sure. Theoretically, that might be a correct conclusion, but I think as a practical matter, it may not be a completely correct conclusion. But I'd be happy to work with those numbers. But for most commercial consumers, 600 kilowatt hours is a very modest amount of electricity. Any business that's operating on 600 kilowatt hours or even up to 2,400 kilowatt hours, because if you're more than 2,400 kilowatt hours, you would not be eligible to participate, I would say that this would be an incentive, not a disincentive. I don't think it would have any impact on conservation measures. But I think it would be a meaningful impact to that small business owner who's struggling to keep the lights on, figuratively speaking, and keep the doors open.
Thank you, Mira.
Yeah, thank you, Mira. Any other questions? I'll pose one real quick. Ms. Scholar, if you could, you might know this. Incandescents, are they going to be available after here in a couple years? I think they're about to go away, right?
Well, they are slated to go away, and I know that it's a staggered go-away program. I think by 2014, the 100-watt bulbs are supposed to vanish, and then a year or two later, the 65-watt bulbs vanish, and then the 40-watt bulbs vanish. But anecdotal stories that I hear is that people are stocking up on them. Is how true is that? Is that true up here in Alaska? I don't know. I do know that when we first introduced compact fluorescent bulbs, 20 years ago, there was a fair amount of resistance to them because they were, you know, emerging technology, and they were not really well tried and tested, and they did not meet their claimed lives. I can tell you that from my own personal experience. And since then, the technology has evolved tremendously. And frankly, you can go into Costco and you can buy an 8-pack or a 14-pack of compact fluorescent bulbs for $6 or $7. So cost is no longer really a viable issue. And we actually do quite a bit of information. We've done a nice little spreadsheet for all of our members that shows them, you know, what the equivalent savings are in energy if you use a compact fluorescent bulb as opposed to an incandescent bulb. So we take the size of the bulb, the number of hours a day it's being burned, and what the annual cost savings would be. And it's really an eye-opener. And I think that it has that moves a lot of people in the right direction. So, yes, the incandescents will technically go away in the market, but it'll be a few years before they really disappear.
I appreciate that. And one more little question. It's along the same vein, a little outside of this particular issue, but I think it makes sense. Are we going to have other issues with compact fluorescent bulbs in some of these communities by having something that we have to now recycle and make sure that we take care of? Is that going to? Do you think that'll cause some issues in some of these communities not having places to recycle those bulbs?
Well, something that we've encouraged communities to do is to just have one of those blue recycle tubs or bins at the city office or at the landfill or wherever, so people can just drop their used compact fluorescent bulbs in there. There is a minuscule amount of mercury in the ballast of the bulb, and so that, in the ballast or in the bulb itself, that has gotten some bad press. And there is some concern about mercury in the landfill, but there is no reason why those bulbs can't be collected. I've been talking to various carriers, like air carriers and barge companies, to see if they would be willing to basically ship those back to Anchorage pro bono, so that they can be disposed of over here. I think that's a very minor issue. I really don't think that that the mercury is a very big issue, but it needs to be addressed locally, and they need to provide a central collection point.
Yeah, I appreciate you answering that, and I would ask, please do a little bit more work to make sure we've got that available. I used, being a transportation, I know when we used to try to fly some of those out, You're not allowed to put them on planes without certain, because they are considered ORMD, which is a hazardous material. So I appreciate what you're doing, and I would request that we find a way to make sure that we don't create another hazard in some of these communities as well. So I appreciate it. It's always good to hear from you, Mayor.
Thank you.
We're going to move next to Mary Erickson. She's in Hoonah. If you would, please state your name and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I'm Mary Erickson. I'm here speaking on behalf of our business here in Hoonah. And I'm just going to echo what everybody else is concerned about, the rates here in Hoonah. Are you there?
We are here. Please continue.
Oh. Okay. Here in Hoonah, even for those that are getting the PCE are outrageous. We all know that this is due to the high cost of diesel to generate electricity, and this is causing a severe hardship on fixed income members of our community. My main concern is this, is local businesses. And I know we've been talking with Adam Berg's office there on some other things, and it's just ridiculous. You know, for our business, which is 1,500 square feet, we have done everything in our power. You know, I've been listening to people talk about weatherization. Well, thank God there is the weatherization program, but they also have certain criteria that you have to meet to be eligible and under a certain income to qualify for, which is another thing that goes against the businesses. It costs the owner money to be able to bring their building up to where it's affordable to heat. And we've had to do away with so much of our business. We've done away with our electric hot water tank. We've done away with a lot of cooling fans. Our coolers, we've taken out all our fluorescent light. We've gone to LED lights. Some of our security lights we've had to turn off and replace with LED lights, and we have to turn off some of our machinery that we use. You know, one example of the machinery that we've had to give up was the nacho cheese heater. You know, and we're grateful that you're even considering this, you know, the PCE for businesses. And it's a temporary fix, I agree, but we also need to look at the, you know, we need more intertie, hydro, geothermal, whatever it's going to take, you know, to help the communities and the people living in the communities. Our community, you know, is a very, very tight-knit community, and right now we have so much happening within our community, but people don't want to come here because of the high cost of fuel and to run a simple little business. I'm paying $1,000 to $1,200 a month for my business, not to mention my home, which is almost $350 a month, and there's just me and my husband. And we have, you know, a cat and a dog, but I don't think they cost us that much. You know, and it's scary because we got people leaving, we got jobs coming into our town. We can't even afford to have people stay here and live in our town because of the high cost. If you want to take a ride through town and look at people's houses, some of these people have candles going in their window because they're so afraid to use their lights at night because it costs so doggone much. You know, and it's scary. You know, and we could do the weatherization and help them, and it's a good thing, but, like I said, they're still facing the high cost of buying fuel to heat the home. And, I'm all for HB 294. It's excellent. It's a good temporary fix, but we still need a long-range plan for this. And I'm glad I was able to do this, and I'm nervous, but thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Mary. Any questions for Mary? You didn't mention the name of your business. Would you mind mentioning the name of your business, Mary?
Sure. It's the Office Bar.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right, seeing no questions, I appreciate your work there, Mary, and I think You've echoed something that many of us have said, is this is obviously a short term. The intent is to make sure that we're looking out for the long-term energy costs of all Alaskans, so I appreciate your testimony there. We'll move next to Elmer Seetot, Jr. He's in, looks like he's in very good Mission. Are you there? And please state your name as well as your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. Elmer Seetot, Jr., Brevik Mission. I'm affiliated with AVAC, Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, as delegate, and also I was called this afternoon to comment on House Bill 294, PCE for commercial businesses. Cost appeal is determined the day the fuel is loaded onto the barge, and sometimes the local businesses have to make a choice whether to make the payment in full or to make payment installments. On top of that, there are a limited number of residents in each community that determine the shipment of the grocery or retail items. Customers already pay a high price for goods that are flown into a community because the businesses are able to add on to the product cost. Fortunately, we in Brevik Mission are not at the top of the fuel prices compared to those communities that are on the river system or where water level is low. There has been a radical shift in rural Alaska that we are now very reliant on electricity. Only time that we're not physically aware of it is when we're in subsistence or recreational camping, and that is pretty much during the spring and subsistence seasons. More people have less money, but the costs for businesses are going up or pretty much are the same, and where employment in the communities is pretty much non-existent other than seasonal openings. The jobs in, some jobs in Anchorage depend on what happens in rural communities, like Alaska Village Electric Cooperative. They have an office there, but main business activities occur in the communities. And in the communities where there are more and more young people depending on commercial store-bought food, that would be a problem for older generation residents that have lived a subsistence lifestyle and now have to pay the cost of food, whether it be high or low, for their children and grandchildren. I apologize for the white noise you may be hearing in the background because I am in a business setting where they have a phone with mute on it. And with that, I thank you for the opportunity to comment on House Bill 294, and I am in support of that.
All right, thank you. Looks like we got a couple questions for you. Start with Representative Sadler and then Representative Foster.
Thank you, briefly, Mr. Chair. Sir, you say that you give the long-term perspective that village life has shifted into reliance on electricity, but the high power costs are causing problems. Not that I'm advocating for or against this, I'm just wondering, does anyone ever ask the question, has this shift to reliance on electricity been a good thing, all things considered? Does that question ever come up?
Not with the people that I kind of associate with, but that was one of the things that has been put out by some community members on that issue. And I'm not really too sure if I answered your question correctly.
Go ahead and follow.
Understand that it doesn't often come up, but by in fairness, I often wonder if my life has improved dramatically by the arrival of computers in my life or not. So I just ask the question sometimes, just wonder if that question's come up on the basic level of electricity. So, thanks.
Representative Foster.
I would think that depends on the person, whether they live in the community or for you, that would be very appropriate. For me, that would be a radical shift because I pretty much live out in the outdoors, and who needs an internet or a computer out in the field?
Right.
Other than maybe satellite phones or stuff of convenience that will be of help to you in your subsistence activities.
I appreciate that. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Umer, do you know how much you pay in terms of your per kilowatt hour? Is that 30, 40, 50, 60 cents per kilowatt?
Pretty close. We're with Alaska Village Electric Cooperative at least maybe about 30 to 35 cents.
Okay, thank you.
Across the board.
All right. Appreciate that. Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Elmer, for taking the time to call in. We'll move to Brian Hirsch, who's in Homer. Please state your name as well as your affiliation. Proceed with your testimony. All right. Seeing that we lost Mr. Hirsch, we will move to Ed Phillips, who is in Hoonah. Ed, if you would, put your name on the record as well as state your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, hi, my name is Ed Phillips. I own the Icy Strait Lodge. It's located in Hoonah, Alaska. I am very much in support of House Bill 294. I see it as a great first step. I own a bar and a restaurant, and it is real clear to me that the residents of Hoonah are suffering. I can see that they have very little discretionary income, and that I am certain that when you consider something like a $20 electric heater potentially costing upwards of, you know, $600-$700 a month if it was on 24/7, you can quickly see it doesn't take much to be trapped into burning a lot of energy. Electricity is wonderful, but as heat, it's extremely costly. I really believe that there should be more attention paid to going into the homes and identifying and you know where energy is being wasted. Because in conversations with people, a lot of them don't have much understanding of where they're burning their power. They're just struggling with the electric bill and unable to really repair the problem. There are many people that I've talked with that it seems clear to me they have got some problem, a defect of some type. Perhaps it's a loose neutral. Maybe an outlet isn't connected right, or a piece of equipment is defective and it's consuming large amounts of energy that are needless. If you were to concentrate a little more attention on like a weatherization type effort, because weatherization is very different from analyzing electric consumption and finding ways to help residents conserve, would be very much akin to the weatherization program, but in a whole other dimension. I cannot emphasize, I believe that diesel electric communities are slowly dying. They cannot continue at the current high cost of living, because what they're doing is they're losing families because there's so little employment. I mean, not having something to do is extremely difficult. And socially, I believe it's creating all kinds of hardships, with social programs or problems. And so I really believe we need businesses to be healthy. And as has been mentioned, there's not very many communities that electricity is, 60, 70 cents a kilowatt that someone's going to go set up a business in. It's just not feasible. And without the jobs, it's getting horrendous. I've watched it for 12 years. I've owned this lodge for 12 years. It's just astonishing how the high cost of energy has just rippled through everything, the freight to get things in, the heating costs, the absolutely everything, the numbers of people in school decreasing. It's eroding our community, and there's just no question about it. It was mentioned that 2,400 kilowatts is the maximum for the business eligibility, and, like as was previously said, if you got to disperse $40,000 in electric costs for your store when a normal store in an urban area would maybe be $4,000, that cost only causes people to go elsewhere to get their main grocery. The grocery stores in our communities become more of a backstop. They're really last resort. And so they only sell less and less, and they have to disperse those costs over fewer items sold. And so, I mean, it's eroding these communities, and you can't see it from a distance, but I promise you, our communities are not going to be anywhere near the success that you're hoping for. Most of our businesses, most of our economy is really your government-based projects. They're where we get our economy. It's not businesses. Anyway, I hope people start to realize this is not really a luxury you're talking about. Every business owner I know is suffering. Every business owner I know is wishing they could get out of this quagmire. The word conundrum is way too delicate. We're all fighting for survival and trying to help people, and it's getting more difficult. If you were to put HB 294 in, then you could start to track the electrical consumption. So you begin to get an idea of really what this business assistance would cost you. It also would let you be able to quickly react if, in fact, price volatility caused the price of diesel to go to $9 a gallon. It's quite conceivable. It would only take, a problem in the Strait of Hormuz, and all of a sudden our diesel costs are out of control. Anyway, I know I'm probably going over 3 minutes, but please understand that this is a serious problem, and you really haven't felt the extent of it, but the people are going to end up in your urban areas because that's where energy is most affordable. And, you got to quit calling it power cost equalization because I'm telling you, it's not equal in the least. For a temporary program, you need to concentrate on the projects that will get us the solution. And until then, please give us power cost equalization. And don't use 2,400 kilowatts as something relevant because I burn upwards of 10,000 and I do everything I can to conserve. Thanks.
All right. Appreciate that. Any questions? Seeing none, I appreciate the testimony, Ed. We are going to move. Thank you. Brian Hirsch is back online. If you would, please state your name as well as your affiliation. Proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Yeah, I apologize for that. We're also experiencing some challenging rural telecommunications problems as well. So my name is Brian Hirsch. I'm with the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, which is part of the U.S. Department of Energy. It is based in Colorado, but I'm actually based in Homer, Alaska, as an Alaska representative for the Department of Energy. And actually, I believe I'm supposed to be testifying in support of the, testifying on the Rural Cap EnergyWise program, which I believe is going to be discussed next. Is that correct?
That is correct. If that's what you're on for, then we will need you to just hold on for a minute and come back.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead.
I will do that. If I may, just I will be very brief, but I do have some specific comments about the Power Cost Equalization Program as well, which is that just recently I commissioned a study by the University of Alaska Anchorage Institute for Social and Economic Research looking at various aspects of the Power Cost Equalization Program, including the issues that are being discussed here today. And the paper is about 98% complete. And I would be happy to send a copy of it with executive summary to the committee considering this today, which I understand when it's completed will be after your consideration if you're moving it forward out of committee. But some of the conclusions are that increasing the amount of eligible kilowatt hours monthly from 500 to 600 does increase the state of Alaska's liability for meeting those energy needs, and yet much of the, as Mayor Kohler testified, many of the recipients of PCE do not exceed or would not benefit from the additional kilowatt hours monthly allocated because most of them do not reach that limit. And what we came up with as, with much research in terms of a proposed solution would be something along the lines of actually a seasonal fixed payment, which means that in summertime people receive a certain amount and in wintertime when costs and consumption go up, they receive a different amount that would be specifically calculated to essentially keep things even as they are right now in terms of how much they receive as subsidy on their energy bills. But if they increase their efficiency or reduce their consumption, they essentially get to keep the difference. So you're providing an incentive for people to use less energy, and it would not increase the state's liability for adding funding to the PCE on the residential side. For commercial customers, indeed, there would be a new user of the subsidy, and there would be an increased cost to the state, but as has been testified many times here today, there's a clear need for it and clear benefits that would come from supporting businesses who are struggling in this way, and the same kind of incentive structure could be, it would be the exact same incentive program such that there would once again be benefits in reducing their use of energy because they would be receiving the same fixed payment monthly, but if they use less energy, then they get to keep the difference. So I'd be happy to provide that as a document to the committee and the full House for consideration.
Yeah, please feel free to send it to my office, and we can get that out to the committee members. I appreciate the testimony there, Brian. Please stay on the line so that you can speak to the rule cap, and we will move on to the last individual that we have here, Ingemar Mathiasen up in Ambler. Please state your name probably correctly and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. Yeah, my name is Ingemar Mathiasen, and I'm the energy coordinator for the Northwest Arctic Borough up in the Northwest Alaska. I appreciate the possibility of testifying today in House Bill 294. Our region up here have arguably the highest cost of energy in all of Alaska. Possibly some of our villages are right up there against $1 limit. We've done a lot of stuff already as far as trying to reach the communities as far as awareness of what's happening. And I just wanted to throw one thing in there that we have done is as far as putting in smart energy meters. Up to this point in time, or up to the point of time where we put these meters in the households, the individuals in the houses had no idea of when PCE limits are reached, and subsequently didn't know when the rate went up. With the TED meters in place, and an alarm actually gives them attention then that the 500 kilowatt hour have been reached, there's a growing understanding of how much energy they can use and what happens after that. A lot of this is educational as far as the households goes. Otherwise, it's just a surprise bill at the end of the month and no way understanding of what's happening. So we find these smart meters very, very good, and we've been working together with EnergyWise here on their program to implement and collect data from them. We strongly support the House Bill 294 up here. And anything will help. I mean, a lot of the households have reached the limits many times over, and including the businesses is a very good option at this point. We recognize that economics in the villages is the basis for the whole village. We have to have jobs, and we have to have money to go around to pay for the electric. And if that doesn't happen, if the businesses fail, then slowly the community falls apart. We have to have means to do that. One other issue is I've been working with Alaska Energy Authority and the Renewable Energy Fund program there, and all that is good. But there is some communities out there that do not benefit from any of that yet, as there is no recognizable renewable resources out there. And it's very important that then that the PCE program is maintaining those communities unless we look at them as communities that can't live there then because there's no alternate energy resources. So it's very important to keep that thing going. I really like Brian Hirsch's variable proposal here. It sounded very good to me. I would like to hear a lot more about that. To vary the amount of PCE according to the needs seems like a good solution for all parties involved in the PCE process. So with that, I think I'll just end my testimony fairly short here. We sent in a letter for support also. I appreciate the effort. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Any questions? And I would like to mention, I do think that the sponsors looked at many different options, and I think there was some form of what was mentioned earlier, some sort of varying amount, and I think it was deemed that it might be a little too complex to manage, so they had to go back and work partly under the system that currently exists. So I will go ahead and make that statement for the sponsor. Looks like I'm getting head shaking. There's agreement, so I'm not speaking out of line there. I believe that Ms. Kohler answered the question that I had asked Mr. Berg to address. Is there anything else you'd like to touch on? Okay. With that, we bring it back to committee. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, you know, make a point. Earlier, somebody had mentioned that PCE was something that, you know, is not always popular with folks. And I just wanted to say that, you know, in the state, we're all in the same boat. You know, we've all got high energy costs, whether you're in Anchorage or Fairbanks. I know in Fairbanks it's becoming more and more of an issue on the electric side right now. Cook Inlet, people have been afraid of possibly running out of natural gas and what that could mean in the long term. And, you know, we certainly want to do something for to make sure that all Alaskans are paying energy, affordable energy costs. And you know, and especially in a state like this where, you know, we're energy rich. We have so many energy resources here. And, you know, right now we're looking at, in the rail belt, we're looking at building a $5 billion Wetana Dam. We're looking at building a $7 or $8 billion gas line from the North Slope down to South Central, where, you know, currently we either don't or we very little tax and the Cook Inlet gas and royalties. You know, there's either little or none of that because we want to keep, you know, the cost of energy down for everybody. In South Central or Southeast, we've got hydro, and you know, we certainly want to expand that. We want to, you know, expand the intertie system down there and do what we can for folks down there. You know, in rural Alaska, as was mentioned, folks are paying anywhere from 35 cents to over a dollar per kilowatt hour for electric, and as I mentioned earlier, PCE was meant to be a bridge, and until we can get to the day where we're fully realizing the full benefits of things like, you know, the weatherization or conservation as we have with the folks with EnergyWise who are trying to help on that front here, you know, and the renewables and intertie, and I know that Mira Kohler has pushed for, you know, possibly consolidating the utilities to realize the economies of scale with, you know, the reduced overhead. You know, we're looking at sources of energy in our own backyard from a regional standpoint. We met with the governor about a week or two ago, and we're trying to look for common ground. What can we agree on? And, you know, the one thing that we all agree on is that we need to try and focus on these things from a regional level. And so, you know, you look at, like, the interior and the Copper River Basin, you've got biomass there, and the Kotzebue Basin, you know, we're looking at getting natural gas up there. And in western Alaska, if a pipeline were to be built, you know, can we can we ship propane down the Yukon and out to Western Alaska? You know, how can we take, you know, advantage of, you know, geothermal, which, you know, we know is near Nome and in the Bering Strait region there. And so, you know, I just wanted to say that, you know, while PCE, you know, may sound like a rural thing, I think it's just one of many things that we're all trying to do for all Alaskans here in the state. And so with that, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Appreciate the view that my co-chair from Nome brings to this issue. I do need to make sure that I close public testimony. Is there anyone online that we have not touched? Is there anyone in the audience? Public testimony is closed. Any other comments from committee? All right.
I guess
Representative Sadler.
I'll echo to some degree my earlier statements that I do think that it's an important program. Obviously, we've heard of the need and the benefits of having PCE, but this is the first I've actually heard of PCE being a bridge, and I'm encouraged by the thoughts that we should dedicate maybe some portion or some increased portion of state revenue to increased fuel efficiency, energy efficiency, weatherization, and so forth, so that the money we spend in PCE is conserved, maybe we get the most out of it. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. Appreciate that. Seeing no other comments, I would entertain a motion to move HB 294 out of committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move that CSHB 294-27-LS1108/Bravo from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes.
Seeing no objections, HB 294 has passed out of committee. So appreciate all the work. We could go ahead and pass around everything. We will take a brief at ease here while the RULCAP people go ahead and whoever's next to present, if you'd please just come up, and we'll go ahead and get you guys started. At ease. Make sure that we have plenty of time for RULCAP to discuss their EnergyWise program. Appreciate you guys being here. If you ladies would, please state your names for the record, and then go ahead and proceed. We do have a few people online. Looks like we have Liz Hensley, Ross Cohen, Brian Hirsch, and Donna Zeibel. I don't know how they may be incorporated into your presentation, but please feel free to call on them as you need, or let me know, and I'll call on them for you. So
okay.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kathy Clements with RULCAP.
And I'm Ellen Kazari with RULCAP.
Very good. And we thank you for the opportunity to share once more with you. We were here last year to share on EnergyWise and this strategy out of many of helping with the energy burden. With that, I know you've listened to hours and hours of people testifying as to the challenges of the high cost of the energy burden in rural Alaska. And of course, there's many ways to help relieve that. And the state is already engaged in very important strategies, of course, one of which is weatherization, renewable energy investments, and of course, considering now the raising of the cap for PCE, all very important strategies. But one that shouldn't be overlooked is the importance of the consumer education. This is all part of the picture. And just as weatherization looks at how to improve the box or the house, EnergyWise is looking at what goes on inside of that house and the behaviors and habits of the consumers, which is, like Ms. mentioned, all part of the picture. RULCAP has deep experience, decades of experience working with weatherization and energy efficiency between back in the 70s when we started our weatherization programs, and following that, launched Renewable Energy Enterprises, our for-profit subsidiary of RULCAP. Also, we've been experimenting with different projects, looking at how to educate in the most effective ways of behavior change over the years. And EnergyWise is all a result of that experience. Basically, we've tried to find the most effective strategies to helping with this consumer education component. And Ellen will be telling you more about the details of what that strategy looks like. One thing now that's different from last year when we presented is that we have more experience under our belt with this current model. This last winter and just last few months have been partnering with NANA, where they have invested their own dollars to help fund EnergyWise, rolled out in six of the NANA communities this last winter, with the goal of over the next 2 years covering all homes in the Nana region. And so the program has now been tested over the course of 3 years and proven with results. And Ellen can go into more about those dollars that both the resident and the state gain in savings through EnergyWise. We have developed this program with partnerships and advice, guidance from both Alaska Energy Authority and AHFC from the state, and many other partners such as the Department of Energy and other energy leaders in the field. Even ABEC has had partnership in helping us with our data. So we're trying to work with the network in putting this forward and have had a lot of good support. But in addition, over this last year, as more regions and organizations have learned about the effectiveness of EnergyWise, we've had a lot of asks over this last year, a lot of different regions asking us for partnership from all corners of the state. And so that's what goes behind our very significant CAPSIS ask at $20 million. We know it's ambitious, but we're looking to make a very real impact. Our intent is to, over the course of 5 years, this $20 million, $4 million per year, and partnerships with the regions that have come forward already. We also, in addition to NANA, have a Tlingit-Hida Regional Housing Authority, who is now, through a grant from the Department of Energy, implementing an EnergyWise program in Southeast, and they're here to speak to that as well. Also approaches from the Quirk region, from TCC, from Dillingham, and Atna, as well as Talista. So this is behind our CAPSIS request, in that we feel like if we can, the state can help by supporting EnergyWise, we can help leverage funding, as we have already proven to do so through NANA and Tlingit-Hida, for instance, that bring matching funds and would help to serve even more homes in their region. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Ellen, who can present the PowerPoint and explain more about the details of the program and how it works.
Thank you. So about 10 years ago.
And please just go ahead and say your name for the record so that she's got it on.
Thank you. Excuse me. My name is Ellen Kazari. I'm with RuralCap.
Thank you.
So about 10 years ago, we were testing out some of this energy efficiency education work. As Kathy mentioned, for decades, RuralCap's been doing energy work in the state, but we really wanted to look at the education piece. And we were piloting a bunch of different models. I was sitting in a home in Togiak, and it's just one of those moments where it all makes sense. I was talking to a woman there and really saying, you know, we've tried all these things. What would help you? And she was an older woman, the only person living in the home. She got up, went to her kitchen, and brought back a box. And I didn't know what was in the box. It looked like recipe cards. I was a little confused, but she opened it up, and there were all of her bills. And she pulled out her most recent electric bill, and it was for $400. And she put it on the table and said, I want to know why. And I think I probably did, like, slap my forehead at that moment because it was so obvious. Here's what we should be doing. We should be helping people figure out the why of their energy bills. And so we spent the next few hours in her home. We had a kilowatt meter, had my calculator, and we went around and we tried to find all the hot spots in her home. Because you didn't walk into this home, which was about, I don't know, 16 by 24, and say, oh, my gosh, you're going to have a $400 electric bill. It was a very modest home. There's no, like, tanning bed and flat-screen TV. It was just, what is wrong? So we went through her home, and we found a bunch of hot spots, and we started identifying things she could do. And that's kind of the basis for this EnergyWise model. For the next 7 years, we've used our AmeriCorps Vista programs and other smaller initiatives to test pieces out. But about 3 years ago, we were able to use some significant funding and really try this in 12 different communities. So what we've come up with is a residential energy efficiency and conservation education program. We work in partnership with a number of the energy providers around the state and with the community to do this project. It's very simple. Our whole goal is to reduce energy consumption, save money, help the state save PCE, LIHEAP cost. We want to create jobs. We want to do as much of the hiring and training locally as we can. And we're looking for some professional development and certification locally, too. I think one of the most comforting things for me coming here and presenting in front of you is to be able to say it's proven. It's not just this idea that we hope works. We've been able to test it. We're seeing great results. In the communities we've been in, 99% of households are participating. Everybody wants to do this. We have 80% of people, about 6 to 12 months later, they're still doing what we're teaching. They're still using their supplies, and they're reporting lower bills. And then where we've been able to do a before and after study, we're seeing residents saving $20 a month in electricity. And considering the PCE rates, the state would be saving $39 a month. The cost is about $2,000 a home, but the return on investment with just electricity is less than 3 years. We're working with NREL and others to try and do a more comprehensive evaluation, and we'd love to help the state crack the nut of actually looking at actual home heating costs and being able to track those too, because I guarantee you that will bring that return on investment down below 3 years. So we are looking for a CAPSIS request, $20 million, and as Kathy mentioned, there are a lot of reasons behind this. We feel like we have a tested and proven program that has long-term results that we can roll out immediately. We know that something is needed immediately, and we're ready to go with this. And Rural CAP is committed as an agency. It's our mission to build healthy economies, so this is part of our mission. But we're getting calls. I probably get a call a week from someone who's a local resident, a community leader, or someone from a regional organization saying, we've heard about your program. High energy costs are killing us. How can we get it in Alaska and in our communities? So that's really why we're here. It's a simple plan that we have. We'd love to do this over 5 years, spending about $4 million a year, being in about 2,000 homes. We would employ about 150 rural Alaskans. And we've already worked with this model of having kind of a competitive selection process so that the communities are coming forward and saying, here's what we're ready to contribute, here's why we need it, and we can work with that. The other thing we already have lined up, this is a collaborative effort. We're working with the other energy service providers around the state. We're getting input from them on how to do this program, how to collaborate so we're not duplicating efforts. And we've already leveraged funding through the Department of Energy, the Denali Commission and Department of Labor. The local communities are putting in what resources they have, even if it's not cash. It's office space and storage space. And we have regional organizations already working really hard to leverage a different additional funds. And the utilities, such as AVAC, are working with us to track results. And this was designed to complement weatherization. We're not at all trying to replace weatherization or get in their way. We want to work with the weatherization program. So we're prioritizing communities that have not been served recently or are not scheduled to be served by weatherization. We're looking at how to do immediate improvements on homes with education. And I think this picture says it all. We're inside the home. We're working with residents. And it's about engaging people and making changes in their own homes. We have some very simple key components that are making this effective. Once again, it's a partnership with the community. The community's involved from the get-go. They own the program, and they work with us to make it successful. And that's really led to them troubleshooting anything that comes up. They help us with logistics. They help us with free storage and office space so that we can stretch the dollars into homes. The message is delivered by local crews, so we do hire locally. It's typically 4 to 10 people per community. They're employed with us for about 12 weeks. And one of the additions since we were here last time is we've been able to leverage funding through Department of Labor to provide some professional certification so that our crews not only work with us and get that reference, but they're coming out of this program with the certification they'd need to work with weatherization programs and construction programs. So they're ready to go with other employment. So the program model is really all about how to help people identify ways to save energy and change their behaviors and use supplies. So they need to hear the message a number of times. We start with a community energy fair. We've had that in every single community we've worked in. Hundreds of people participate. They show up. They learn about the initial messages about energy conservation and efficiency. They sign up for their home visit. That's when they buy into the program. This is the most time-intensive part of the program, but since it works, it's worth the investment. We have two crew members go to each home. They spend a full day in the home working with the residents. So it's not something that's done to your home while you're not there. It's showing you how your home works, how your energy bills work, what PCE is, how all of this works, and how you can save. There's a very specific set of steps we go through with the residents, all the hot spots that are kind of common that we identify. And then they get to work with us and show us where some of their problems are, what things they might be seeing. We look at energy bills. We put together basically an individual plan with their residents on how they can save money. And we do install about $300 worth of energy efficiency supplies. Very low-tech stuff, but it's all needed. Again, classic example, we have three generations sitting down with our EnergyWise crew. It's a very comfortable way to do education when you're working with your neighbors and your relatives and people that are all, you know, living with the same problems. So we've had just a lot of success there. I think I know, probably said this last year, but concrete example of what happens, you're testing appliances, you're showing people how to save money. We had a call come in from Selowik from our crew leader saying, am I doing the math wrong? Because the coffee pot that we're testing is saying $750 a year to keep this on for the number of hours that it's typically kept on. And he wasn't doing the math wrong. That's what it's costing. So if for $20 we can get a coffee carafe out there, that's a permanent savings, and that's what we did. These are the supplies we're installing in homes. Like I said, it's low-tech stuff. It's water heater blankets. It's a new door sweep for your door. We're really looking at the places where the snow is flying in or the energy is going out, and it's not being it's not causing people to, like, suffer. We're not saying put on a sweater and turn down the heat. We're saying let's figure out where the energy is not even giving you a benefit, and let's cut that back. And I like the question earlier about what's happening with CFL bulbs. This is a type of program, and the people that we work with here are really trying to look at all the details. So we've set up a prepaid backhaul program for any CFL bulbs that we're installing so that they are getting shipped back to the proper recycling facility, because our goal is just to make everything better and do no harm along the way. This is not just a picture of some of our crews in action. Just looking for some of those hot spots, areas that we don't typically see insulation and light switches, making sure water heater blankets are water heaters are running efficiently, getting those areas sealed up around the doors and windows that just open up during the year. So then we have the third time that the residents have a contact with EnergyWise is about 3 to 6 months after the initial home visit, and that's when we go back and we do a follow-up survey. That's a way for us to gauge how effective the program is, get some feedback from the residents, and also answer any more questions that are out there so we know we've kind of made the full circle. Here are our initial results. In 2010, we had 120 Alaskans trained and employed with EnergyWise. We were in 12 communities, 1,000 homes. We had about 7,500 people participate in the education activities. Based on the follow-up surveys and observations, like I said, we have 80% plus who are still practicing the energy efficiency and conservation measures. We have people who are reporting lowered home heating costs and electric bills going down. And that's, we surveyed about 700 out of the 1,000 were still the same residents in the households. We were able to do a case study in Kasiglik and look at 12-month before and after electric bills, and here's what we're seeing. The average bill before, 287 kilowatts, after about a 25% reduction. So for the resident, that's $20 savings a month. For the state and PCE costs, that's about $39 savings. For those of you who are more visual, here's how it just drops. And that's 12 months before and after, which, as far as I've been told by independent evaluators and others working on this, that's the gold standard for being able to say, here's some proof that it's working. So the return on investment's pretty quick. Like I mentioned earlier, it's about 3 years. That's the cost per home is about $2,000. The annual savings is about $700. And just a quick breakdown of what our budget looks like. About half of the costs go to the local employment and training, about 25% going to the supplies and shipping, and about 25% of that goes to the management, coordinating the logistics and the evaluation of the project. So it's a very simple program. That employment cost is the most substantial part. That's because of the time it takes to go home to home. But we also know that that knowledge base stays in the community. So it's a really good investment, because then after the program's finished, we still have 4 to 12 people in the community with that information who can continue to help. In 2011-2012, Nano Regional Corporation came to us and said, we want this program. And they were bold. They came forward with $860,000 in matching funds. And just said, we want this program in 6 of our communities. The other thing they said was, we want to see it in every household. There's a real need for middle-income people in rural Alaska who maybe don't qualify for weatherization or other services, but who don't have extra money to make these changes in their homes. And Anna said, we want to help them too. It's been absolutely fantastic working with them and the community partnerships. Ingemar Mathiasen and the Northwest Arctic Borough have come on board with their TED meters, so they've been going into homes with the TED meters at the same time we're there, so that we're collaborating and making sure that these energy detective meters are on and show people what energy, the electricity that they're using, when they're getting close to their PCE cap, and it's a group education effort. The Housing Authority weighed in on a program design and helped us make sure that we weren't overlapping or duplicating. Denali Commission and Department of Labor provided funding for the training and professional certification and for some work in public buildings, so we were able to supply community council offices and clinics with some of the same education materials and help them as well with their high costs. And then the Department of Energy, NREL, is helping us fund the evaluation measures. Alaska Works is providing, so you can see it's just a long list of all the partners who basically stepped up and have been so wonderful to work with. AWP is working with us on the training. Here are outcomes. We've been in six communities. 42 community members have received their professional certification. We've employed 50 people. We finished up 530 home visits in February. We had about a 99% participation rate. It's probably 99.9. We had maybe one or two households where people just weren't in the community. A few people didn't participate. But over 2,000 people have received this energy efficiency and conservation education. And we're starting to hear a lot of good information about energy bills. I can't give you yet the 12-month before and after because we're just finishing up. But we were able to do some surveys in the households that received the home visit November and December and had at least 1 month of bills afterwards. And there were about 57 households in that category. The average bill for their electricity was $312. Their average savings after EnergyWise for the month after was $35. And 82% said their homes felt warmer and were easier to keep warm, which is pretty incredible when you compare December, which was pretty average cold weather, to January, the record-setting cold weather. So we feel pretty good that they're saying some of these minor changes really help. So that's our program. We really feel like we have this model that works. We've tested it. We have results. We have partnerships in place. And we have calls from all over the state wondering how can we bring this program to them.
All right. I'm sure, I know there's a couple questions from committee members. Do you want to mention there are a couple people that would like to talk, so just keep that in mind as we ask the questions. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have real quick comments here. The first one is, at least my two takeaways from this are jobs being the first one. If you look at Anchorage, for example, 300,000 people in Anchorage, average village, say 200 people, Anchorage 1,500 times larger than your average size village. So if you've got 10 people on the ground for 3 months, you multiply that by 1,500, it's like 15,000 people coming to Anchorage working for a couple months. That's a big impact for a small village, and so I really like that. Number one. Number two, you had mentioned $500 per year savings to PCE for residences. And I think that's probably a big takeaway for the folks representing the state here is that, you know, this is a program that's going to save us in terms of what we pay out for PCE. So anyway, I just wanted to make that point. And thank you very much.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Representative Foster. Representative Sadler.
Ms. Kazin, Ellen, with $20 million, that is an ambitious ask, but what could you reach with $20 million? What could you accomplish with that?
Thank you. Representative Sadler, through the chair, our plan would be to be in 2,000 households a year over 5 years.
May I? And Representative Sadler, through the chair, that would be...
And state your name for the record since we switched.
I'm sorry. Kathy Clements with Rural Cat. The 2,000 homes would be uniquely with state funding, what the state funding could leverage. As I mentioned earlier, we've had success with programs and regions coming forward to match those dollars. So if we offer the opportunity for funding to regions that can provide matching funds, we would see us being able to serve more than 2,000, maybe even up to doubling that with the state leveraging matching funds from regions.
All right, thank you. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick comment. I'm buying a craft, coffee craft.
Right.
I'm buying a coffee craft.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I know we had a couple people that were in the audience that were signed up to testify. It looks like we got Tasha I couldn't tell if that's McCoy or McKay, but I think she along with Ricardo Worrell. Juan or both of you want to make some comments related to this? Please feel free and state your name and your affiliation when you approach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ricardo Worrell. I'm Vice President with Clinkett Haida Regional Housing Authority. Our housing authority serves the 14 communities here in Southeast Alaska. We have roughly 1,000 units. We also are a recipient of the state weatherization program. Last year, we received about $3 million for about 230 homes, and we expect the same this coming year. So we're very familiar and very grateful for the accomplishments of the state weatherization program. You know, in recent years, the mission of our housing authority has been to address affordable housing issues. And our focus was on overcrowding, on homelessness, on senior housing, on the dilapidated conditions, in rural communities. However, in the last few years, we've been forced to the table with energy costs. Right now, our budget is consumed, about one-third of our budget is consumed by energy costs and heating costs. And so we've taken the approach of we're going to do as much as we can to tackle this issue. Weatherization was a big part of that. And the other side of the coin, as the folks from RuralCap talked about, is we're addressing the issue of the house and the unit and the box. But that could all go out the window, literally, when we go back to a house that we've installed new windows and furnace and roofs and insulation, and we go in there and we see they left the window open when it's 20 degrees out, the lights are on. All of these issues of behavior by the homeowner are things that we have to take on. And after hearing and studying the EnergyWise program from the folks from RuralCap, no reason for us to reinvent a wheel. It's an effective program. And it's owned by the community. That's one of the things that we really liked, is it's not a regional entity or a government entity coming in and saying, you need to turn those lights off, you need to turn your heat down. It's coming from members of the community who take ownership of this issue and who are motivated by cost savings. Lastly, I'll just end with a story. Before we got our Department of Energy grant to do our small version of the EnergyWise program, we did sort of a test case in Cake, Alaska, and went out there and we did the community part, and then one of our employees went to the store, and one of the things he noticed is that after we gave this big lecture on energy conservation and using CFL light bulbs, we found out you could not even buy them, you know, at the store. So it's about a shift in awareness and focus and priorities. And that's all I have to say. I'd like Tasha, one of my associates from the Housing Authority, to speak a little bit more about our efforts. Thank you.
My name is Tasha McCoy from Clinkett Haida Regional Housing Authority, and I was just going to say some of the statistical data that we had found. In four of our communities that Clinkett Haida is going to be serving with our Southeast Energy Conservation Program, they're about 275% above the national average on electricity costs. That's in the communities of Angoon, Cake, Huna, and Yakutat. So there's a very high cost communities. Also, Clinkett Haida services LIHEAP clients. And last year we had 1,200 LIHEAP recipients, and they received over $850,000 in funding. And that's down from the previous year, and we've had more people applying for this program. So that funding is going down while more people are trying to receive the funding. So there's just a big need to figure out other ways that we can help out our communities. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Mm-hmm. You said that the number of homes is going down, but the cost is rising for LIHEAP, did you say? I kind of missed that.
The number of people that are wanting to receive LIHEAP is going up. The funding is going down. Last year we received over $1,100,000, and this year we only received $851,000. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Any other questions for either one of them? Thank you both for taking the time to talk to us about the program's impact on you guys. I do also have Mitzi Bartle on here, but it doesn't look like it says that she wants to testify. Okay. There are four people online. We are at the 5 o'clock time frame. I'll stay for a couple minutes. I don't know if everyone here will be able to do that, but if you would, please, we'll start with Liz Hensley up in Kotzebue. If you would, just real briefly, tell us a little bit about the RealCap program and how it's impacted your area as well.
Hello. This is Elizabeth Hensley. I'm the Corporate and Public Policy Liaison at NANA. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak very briefly about NANA's participation in the EnergyWise program. We, as many of you might know, we are the Angsta Corporation belonging to over 12,900 Inupiaq shareholders in Northwest Alaska. Where there is an energy crisis, our President Marie Green often states that this is the single largest barrier to regional economic development in our region. In rural Alaska, an average of 47% of household income goes toward energy costs, and our region is no different, where as an example, 1 gallon of gas costs between $6.25 and $10.46. In Kotzebue, the hub gas is going at over $7 right now, just so you can kind of get a perspective. I know. But we are up against a daunting problem, and we are really happy to have teamed up with RuralCap, along with the Northwest Arctic Borough, the Northwest Inupiaq Housing Authority, and tribal and municipal governments to offer the program, the EnergyWise program, in our region. As was stated before, we are the first private organization to fund EnergyWise, and we're very proud of that. In 2011, our board approved an $860,000 expenditure to fund the first of three phases of this program, making each household in the six highest need villages eligible for the program at no cost. Upon completion this spring, phase one will have provided efficiency upgrades to more than 500 homes, education to more than 2,000 people, and jobs to 50 residents and certification to 42 local residents. And I'd really like to emphasize that the local hire element was particularly appealing to NANA, as we are committed to not only creating jobs for residents of the region, but opportunities like this to help develop leadership skills that make a long-standing difference in the economic health of communities. The five remaining villages, plus Kotzebue, are eagerly anticipating the rollout of the EnergyWise program in their communities in phases 2 and 3, which we plan to have completed by 2013. NANA is in full support of RuralCap's capital request, which would help make completion of phase 2 and 3 possible. We've received a lot of letters from beneficiaries of phase 1, thanking us for investing our private dollars to make this program available. And as was stated before by the RuralCap folks, it's tried and true. It's saving people money right now, and we would really appreciate the state's partnership to help RuralCap deliver this simple, cost-effective, job-creating tool to the rest of our region and to other regions throughout the state. Thanks very much.
I appreciate
it. Have a good day.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Ms. Hensley. We'll go ahead and forego any questions from the committee and move directly to Ross Cohen up in Fairbanks with the Tanana Chiefs Conference.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for your time. My name is Ross Cohen. I'm the Rural Energy Specialist at Tanana Chiefs Conference in Fairbanks, a nonprofit consortium of 42 tribes in the Alaskan interior. And I'm testifying today with my strong support of RuralCap and the EnergyWise program. What I have to say is really a repeat of what the previous speakers have already spoken to. So I'll keep my testimony very brief. Here at Tanana Chiefs in the Rural Energy Department, we do a lot of work with rural energy development, particularly alternatives and renewables, solar, wind, hydro, things like that. We also have a weatherization program where we work on residential units and tightening up the envelope. But we've been getting a lot of calls about the sort of behavioral training and how people consume and conserve electricity. And it didn't take very many phone calls and not a lot of work on my part to discover that rather than have Tanana Chiefs reinvent a program from the ground up, a better course of action for us would be to partner with RuralCap and the really great work that they're already doing on this front. There are at least two communities in the Tanana Chiefs region, that's Huslia and Ruby, that have benefited directly from this program. I do not have numbers in front of me, and as I believe Kathy and Ellen mentioned, they are tracking the actual data. But just anecdotally, I've heard from residents that their electric bills have gone down, and they're very grateful to be able to take ownership of their energy needs and conservation. As opposed to, simply someone replacing a window or something like that, and there's little effort on their part. The behavioral aspect is really an important cornerstone of this program. So I very much support their funding request, and I sincerely hope that Tanana Chiefs will be able to partner with RuralCap in the future on this great program. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. And lastly, Mr. Hirsch, we heard from you once before. If you would, please, again, state your name for the record and give us your testimony. Please, if you wouldn't mind keeping it rather concise.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members and everyone else there. Brian Hirsch with the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, part of the U.S. Department of Energy. And as was mentioned, I am funding some of the data collection efforts of the RuralCap EnergyWise program to hopefully dispel any remaining doubts, if there are any at all, about the effectiveness of the program. And the intent is really to see how well it is working and replicate that and distribute that for people to really recognize that, as has been stated, we don't need to reinvent the wheel, et cetera. I just want to offer that as somebody who's been working in rural Alaska for 20 years on energy issues as a private contractor, running a nonprofit organization, working directly for tribes, and now working for the federal government, there are not many organizations that can say we have been to literally every single home in a community and that we are having impact on that scale. And when we first were negotiating the contract with RuralCap and they said, oh, we're going to, you know, go to 100 homes in a village that has 100 households, I said, are you sure you want to do that? You know, don't you want to leave yourself any leeway? And they said, no, we are going to every single home, and that is our job, and that's how we do this program. And I have to say, to date, they have kept their word, and they have done that in every situation that I'm aware of. And so I think that just in and of itself is a very impressive feat that we want to be supporting. And so I'm trying to do what I can with a limited budget in terms of providing data, and I hope that the state will come in and continue to support the effort on as broad a basis as possible. So thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate that, Mr. Hirsch. All right. As that is the last testifier, we will go ahead and wrap up today's hearing. The next meeting will be Thursday, March 22nd. We will address HB 323, which is the Non-Attainment Area Home Heating System Grants. I believe that's Representative Wilson's. And we will also have a presentation by Polar Consult Alaska, which is a high-voltage direct current transmission. So it is about 5:09, and this meeting is adjourned.